Welcome to the When Bearing Witness podcast. This podcast is an invitation to explore trauma-informed storytelling, a safe and healthy process of gathering and telling painful stories. It's hosted by me, Maria Bryan, a career storyteller. I have long believed that storytellers play a crucial role in making the world a better place. For a brief moment, I was introduced to the concept of trauma-informed storytelling, and it changed my life. Join my conversations with trauma-informed experts and social good storytellers as we help shape the intersection of trauma-informed care and the storytelling process. Stories are sacred, and we can create safe spaces to tell and share them.
Almina, welcome to When Bearing Witness. It's such a joy to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I know we have this conversation that I should be here for a long time. I'm so glad and grateful this has finally happened.
I want to know a little bit about your journey. What brought you to really exploring data equity and human-centered AI? What brought you here?
So I have spent a lot of years looking at data in different ways. I have worked for almost 15 years. I don't like to give that number. It just makes me feel older a little bit. In my head, I feel like I'm still in college, but I don't know if it's not that case anymore. So it's been quite a few years. I've spent time in the tech industry, in the nonprofit industry, looking at data in different ways. And what I mean is creating dashboards, creating metrics, looking at reports, taking a raw sample data, and then going and talking to a bunch of people to say, okay, this should be your strategy. And this has been my world for quite a number of years. I think pandemic did something, I don't know, it did something that made me realize, okay, you know, this is not working out for me. Mostly because I started to realize I don't have the space to own and feel everything I want to. And I wanted to go deeper. I also started to realize that the way I work with data, it doesn't necessarily reflect my lived and learned experiences. I would take a sample of the data. I would look at those pretty bar charts. I would look at that top bar, which is like the highest, tallest, longest, pull out some strategies out of it, and then, you know, go talk about it. But I started to question during the pandemic, what does it mean for someone like me, who looks like me, who talks like me, to be in the data? What does that mean? What does it mean if I end up on your spreadsheet? When I use the word I, it's not more like a, you know, self-fulfilling way, but really for every identity I'm talking, what does it mean if I end up on your Excel spreadsheet? And that one question started bugging me more and more because I could not find a good answer for that. Even after working so many years with data, I knew how to work with data in a certain way with certain constraints and conditions, but I did not know how to go deeper into it, how to talk about inclusion and access when, you know, the people I'm working in the data points do not feel that way. And so that became my work. That became my reason and why to show up every day and then ask the question, how can we do good with data?
I love that so much because often storytellers will say to me, you know, stories are really important, but how do we build authority and storytelling? And I always say, bring in the data, make sure that you're using data in your storytelling. And I love having you on because there is a right and a wrong way to use data. Even before we even see the data, because you're kind of like a few steps back, right? Before you even see the data. And so I so appreciate that there are folks like you in the data space that are saying, you know, people are using this data in really powerful ways to change hearts and minds. People can use it, can weaponize data. And so to have you advocating for data equity is so important. And I do specifically want to talk about AI because AI has been around probably longer than people think, but it exploded last year. And when it became just very accessible and people were using it more, you were one of those voices that I was seeing coming up, kind of taking a stand on, we need to be careful about how we're using AI, and we can use human-centered AI, but it's going to take thoughtfulness on those few steps back, like behind the scenes. So let's kind of set, some foundation here on why we're having this conversation. Can you share how AI systems may cause harm, how they may perpetuate inequities?
Sure, of course. I think the biggest idea here, I'm probably not getting to the response right away, but I want to share one thing, starting with why we are having this conversation. Mm. One of the biggest reasons we are having this conversation is because most of us do not understand that the data points are us. We are the data points. We take data points as some other entity which lives in the systems, goes through some programs, creates some output, does some magic, gets turned into a strategy. But we, humans, are the data. We are the data. That's a simple statement. We forget. So we often forget, how do we build inclusion in the data? Or even for that matter, why do we need to think about inclusion and access and equity in the data? Because we are talking about humans, because we are talking about our community. This same idea extends to AI, because our AI systems are nothing but really, a group of programs, a group of algorithms that are going to look into these data points to create some patterns and predictions and output that's going to be hopefully meaningful. And so what we risk here, or to your question, how can they create harm? One example would be an AI system that looks at several resumes, and this has happened in the past. So I'm picking up probably a very common example. It has looked through resumes of a bunch of, let's say, 100 resumes, and it scores those resumes based on their experience and expertise to say, okay, these are good for your job description and these are not. Where does the bias come in here? The biases come in here depending on what your data speaks to your AI algorithms. If all your resumes are coming from similar demographic, with similar background, with similar bachelor's people, with this kind of a name, from this kind of an identity, the algorithm is going to pretty much learn, this is a good demographic for me to pick up and say these resumes are good for the job. And so any new resume, which has a different kind of a name, which is coming from a different kind of an industry or different kind of country, different kind of racial ethnicity, anything that's not matching with the majority is going to be an outlier. It's not going to show up in the strategy. It's not going to show up in the next steps. It's not going to show up in the output. That's what we are risking here. We are risking somebody's story who does not match the majority population in the data set. So we are having this conversation for the data that's uncollected, for the data that's not represented well.
Okay. That's very scary to me. And I understand that example so clearly. And when I've said to people in the past that I'm concerned about bias in AI, I have been told, well, you're only going to really uncover unbias if the user is bias and is kind of plugging in bias questions. And I guess they're just thinking like your typical ChatGPT. But to me, I disagree, because it is on the data collection side that the user doesn't necessarily have control. Does that make sense?
It 100% makes sense. I have heard this so many times that, it just depends on the data. Play with the data, you would be fine on the algorithm side of things. You'd be fine with the system side of things. It doesn't work that way. Part of the reason is, again, going back to the first statement, we don't understand that data is us. We are the data points. That's one. Two, we are becoming part of data sets every day without even knowing how we are becoming part of those data sets. We are already living in data. And we are finding new places to be in the data by the way we use our phones, by the way we use our desktops, by the way we use our applications, new systems. Try this for 30-day subscription. Try that for 7-day subscription. We are living in a lot of data sets without even fully realizing where we are existing on this planet on different data systems. So how that data is being used, and I'm opening up a can of worms here, like privacy regulations, ethics, and things like those. But all of that contributes to how this data is going to be used and how it is causing bias. It's not just, you know, what I am entering into your database to be said, okay, you asked me 5 questions, this is what bias is. But it's also where you are asking, how you are asking, whose voice are we centering when we are capturing those points. I'll give you another example here, and I often use this in my workshops. I have a grocery store next to my home, that my previous home here in Vancouver. That grocery store used to have a few short questionnaire, like 5 question surveys. The purpose of that survey was that the grocery store people could understand the food insecurity in the population, local population. And so they asked questions like demographic questions. It was anonymous unless you reported who you are and things like that. But it had questions about identity. It had questions about what you do in the store, what kind of things you purchase, your family, food habits, all those things. And as a data nerd, I always used to be curious how many people filled that form. So I used to spend like 5 minutes extra in the store just to see, okay, who's filling it up. The purpose of that form was to take all that data. It was a big project here, so it was all public, that they would turn it into a model. We would figure out where are the gaps for the food banks, because food banks have more and more pressure on, you know, the food insecurity and things like that. And not a lot of people used to fill that form. Few used to, but not a lot. You know what that form was when people used to go and see that? That form was the place where institutions met those people. That form was the place where people would realize what are the values of that organization. And so, you know, these examples that we are talking about with AI systems, what we are risking, what are we not risking, who's entering the data and biases coming, there is a lot happening here that if we don't focus intentionally on what are the places biases can come from and what are we doing about it, if we are not very intentional, we are very quickly going to relay the message back to community. Our data values, that's not for you. We don't have data values. Just engage with us and the systems these we have. So we need to have that intentionality when you're talking about bias. Whether or not, you know, to your point, it just depends on the user. It just depends on the person. No, we need more deeper, conscious, meaningful lens when we are talking about biases than that. That's probably a longer answer than you needed.
Oh, it's just as deep as I was hoping for, because we are in such a crucial time for AI. And I think we're thinking more deeply maybe about data now because of AI. We're more and more reliant on tools and algorithms, that this is a space for us to make choices as a culture, as a people, that we are going to take a hard look at the back end, at the systems. And are we doing this in a way that is ethical? And what kind of consequences will happen if we don't slow down and do this right? And so let's maybe talk about where we are doing things right. How can we shape AI systems and data systems to be inclusive and equitable and justice-centered? How might you have done some of those examples differently?
I want to acknowledge that I don't have the perfect answer. I am a person right now coming into this conversation who does these kind of talks and conversations a lot, probably more than any other person who might be interested in AI is. I am having these conversations every day, but the perfect answer. What I do have is we need a lot of conversations, a lot. We need to talk about ownership. We need to talk about accountability. We need to talk about privacy, regulation, ethics. We need to talk about what does it mean if we are using these AI systems and there are consequences which we are not prepared for. What do we do when we are risking alienating people? You know, when so my background also takes me back to designing algorithms. And an example here would be when you write an algorithm, it gives you an output. And then there are certain criteria and factors on which you evaluate if you're, how did your algorithm do? Did it do good? One of the ways, for example, is knowing how many true positives and true negatives, these kind of, you know, these are terms that we use to evaluate, okay, what is the situation here? What is the output here? And I have seen algorithms getting a green light depending, you know, it's 80% right. You know, we are getting what we need in these true positive, false negatives, true negatives, all the confusion matrix we're getting. It's 80% right. It's pretty good. Let's go ahead. The problem is, if we are, especially for AI systems that have higher implications on human life, we need better understanding to what happens to those 20% of the times when the algorithm did not work out, well, those data points. We need somebody to go dig deeper and see, okay, so those 20% that did not match and fit any criteria in the evaluation, why did that happen? Where are those data points coming from? And what would happen if we still pass this algorithm, give it a green light, put it into production, and we are seeing still that 20% every cycle is not going to, whatever, get access to services or whatever is the purpose of the algorithm, it's not going to be fulfilled for the 20%. What implication, what impact does it have? What we lack right now in conversations around AI is two pieces. And I think we need that in these conversations more. One, how do we evaluate if this AI system is working for us or not? Right now, we are in that space where a new AI tool comes. It's so shiny. It's so bright. We are so excited. We just want to use it. We want to try it. And we say, yes, it's working. It saved me something. But we don't have a proper evaluation plan on what do we need. Two, we don't have any kind of governance around it. We don't have, by governance, I mean any kind of conversation about accountability and ownership and things like those. If things go south, who's accountable? The company whose product we are using, or I, who's, you know, has a subscription on this product? Who's responsible for those? And we don't have those kind of, that kind of clarity in our conversations. We need those. And so, again, going back, but I don't have a perfect answer. We need a lot of conversations to talk about these two things, especially these two things.
This episode is sponsored by Bloomerang, a solution that helps nonprofits like ShowerUp. ShowerUp provides mobile showers and personal care for those experiencing homelessness. Thanks to Bloomerang, ShowerUp increased their volunteer signups by 60% and first-time donors by making it easy to give right on their site. ShowerUp's executive director, Paul Schmidt, said, "Bloomerang is an ideal marriage of volunteer and donor management. The deeper we get into it, the more we love it." If you want to see how ShowerUp easily manages their volunteer and donors with Bloomerang, go to bloomerang.com/bearing-witness or visit the link in the show notes to learn more.
Are you seeing folks doing this right? Like, where are you getting excited? Or are we not there yet?
You're fighting. I'm excited about AI. I mean, regardless of how, I have seen a lot of potential when I design these things, or I've seen, talk to people who design these things. I understand the potential it can do. Where we mistreat that potential is by placing way more power onto it than it should have. We almost dismiss ourselves immediately from the equation, feeling there, yeah, it's going to take care of everything. But this is a technology. We need to onboard it. We need to build a relationship with it. We need to teach it how to build things better for us. And so if AI has a lot of potential, I'm always excited for that. And I would say, you know, based on my conversations, I've seen organizations doing they're opening up about the conversation around governance. They're opening up about talking about, okay, who needs to learn what. They're opening up about having their staff members try a little bit of AI tool, any tool, ChatGPT or whatever, to say, okay, you can have your tasks AI oriented. What's not happening, and that I hope we move towards soon enough, is starting to talk about evaluating AI's impact. So, you know, we brought this technology into our organization. Let's measure it, figure out if it's really serving us or not. That kind of very robust evaluation, I hope we get to that part as well. And two, we start talking about how do we move from this task-oriented AI to mission-centered AI. Like if I have five task members, three of them use some form of AI, then I know a lot of organizations are using AI right now, but it's all task-based. How do we move from there to make it team-based, from team-based to org-based, and all the way up to mission-centered? How do we do that? And I hope we can get to that part of the conversation. That will make me way more excited.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit more about that. What other kind of opportunities do you dream of that will promote the human experience, social justice, equity within the world of AI? So you've given this example of moving from just task oriented to teams and organization wide. And I love that dream. Are there any other ways that you just see AI as actually being this positive, wonderful tool for equity? Or is it just something that we need to just be on guard for at all times?
I mean, AI offers a lot of opportunities to dream. It does. It truly does. It has a lot of potential if you treat it the right way, just as any other technology, just as, let's say, knife. The first time knife came into the world, if we would have just, you know, used it without any guardrails, we would have obviously have a lot more band-aids on our hands, but we learn how to use it for cutting apples and onions in the right way. And so it's the same case with technology. If we understand why we have it, how can we use it? And when I say how, which is your question, Maria, how can we use it? I think we are going to learn about the potential opportunities the more we engage with it. Task-oriented AI, when I said in my last response, really means that, you know, we are engaging with AI for one specific task. For example, this AI, this pen could be an AI-based pen, which the job is to just write me a letter when I use it. It would have its own words, it's gonna do something, and it's gonna write its own words. Moving outside of task-oriented AI means if you are my team member, then we start having conversations about AI. When you and I start having conversations about AI, we take it to our rest of the other teams, the other staff members, the other colleagues, other peers, to make this conversation about how does the AI tools that we have is really serving our mission. It's really serving the core purpose of our existence as an organization. Why do we need this AI? And so to move from this pen-based AI use to that kind of conversation, we are going to figure out a lot more better kind of opportunities where AI can be used. Right now, we are not open up to that kind of possibilities. But AI does offer a lot of possibilities. I have seen a few being used in a really nice way in foundations for social justice work, figuring out how to expand the impact of their programs through AI systems. They have human interventions in those systems where, you know, they check, okay, who's getting what access to what kind of services through this program that people are using in this AI-based tool. And so there are some organizations that are doing it. They're trying to do it in a very purpose-driven way, which is great. And I'm hoping and dreaming the same for my entire sector.
I hope so too. So I'm sure many of our listeners are having so many aha moments. They might have thought of AI as something to help write their emails and social media, and now they're really maybe hopefully thinking deeper about this. So if they are wanting to advocate for responsible AI, so we're at this juncture of creating systems, creating accountability, hopefully, what can they do to maybe get involved in the responsible AI movement?
Well, the first thing each of us can do is come up with And I'm going to say this in the simplest, easiest way that I say to everybody, we need our AI values. We need our individual AI values. What does AI mean to me? And I'm probably talking in a way which might feel to listeners that, oh, this is so basic, but we do need to be at that level of basic. We do need to go back to fundamentals. We don't need 5 different amazing features of a new product to say, that is what I need. No, what I need me and people like us, you, to do is figure out what our AI values are. What does it mean if we are sitting on a table with 5 people, 2 of them are presidents of an organization, 2 of them are CEOs and C-suite leadership? What does it mean if I'm engaging in a conversation of AI? Where am I entering into that conversation? What would it take for me to be accountable for everything that I'm talking about AI, the way I'm going to use, sell, purchase, engage with AI? What would I need? And so the clearer I am in my values, how I'm going to engage, the better positioned I am to have these conversations with people on different tables, with different roles, with different titles, as opposed to waiting for the marketing materials to read off different organizations. So I want that to start from that place of clarity and that place of strength, you know, that this is what my values of AI are. And then you can start go advocating in your team. This is what we need because I understand what this and this thing is, and this is how it can help us. Start opening up that conversation in your team for others to engage in the same way. And then you're going to open it up for bigger questions like we need governance, we need evaluation, we need to talk about ethics. So I'll probably start there.
I love this idea of having a set of values for AI use or AI development, because I feel like we're at a point where a lot of folks are secretly using AI. They don't want people to know that they're using AI. And so if organizations can say like, no, it's okay for us to use AI. There's lots of ways to use AI. Grammarly is an AI tool just to help with grammar check. You know, no. Oh, I can't imagine someone saying like, no, don't use a tool to help correct grammar. And so what might that look like? Maybe give me like 2 or 3 different value statements or sentences that can put people thinking of what kind of values should we be thinking about when it comes to AI instead of hiding behind it.
Well, that's just a perfect example, what you just said. A lot of people are using AI, but we are hesitant to say that out loud, that we, you know, this is coming from with in collaboration with the AI tool, right? So one example would be how I have done with one of my, this is a group that I'm working with. And what we have done is we have established this person that I'm talking about, just to set some context here. She is a director of prospect research and analytics. Her job title now includes exploration of AI in the organization and bringing it more. And what we have done is the organization is not ready. So what we have done is we have set up some very specific lunch and learns every week for 45 minutes. And now it's a big ask for the whole organization to come together every week. So not everybody drops in, but whoever is available, they would drop during that lunch and learn. And this director and I would work together to figure out what would be the prompts and guiding questions in these conversations. And so one of the conversations would be, they had recently was, you know, when somebody uses a PowerPoint and then immediately a group of us know, they use ChatGPT for that. And we judge on that. Like, you use ChatGPT for that? Like, almost that work is no longer valuable. Let's talk about those big, messy feelings. Let's unpack that. Why do we feel that way? Why? What would we need to own that we use ChatGPT in certain ways? Do we need some guiding prompts or questions to say, if you are fulfilling these 7 things, then you are using ChatGPT ethically. And then it's okay to say you build something in collaboration with that product. So, you know, having some really raw, basic, simple conversations with your team members to come up with like a few ground rules where you all can go and anchor to it when we are using these AI tools. That's what I simply mean as we need more AI values.
So I hear a few different values in there. I hear being non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful value. Being team-oriented. we're not going to do this in silos, make decisions in silos. We're going to come together. We're going to have these lunch and learns. And being transparent, right? Just being transparent and authentic for when we are using it.
And that's when they open up and I'm talked like, how are you using it versus how am I using it? Are there places where we're making sure that ethics is centered there, our community is centered there? We are opening up conversation for a lot of different possibilities.
I love that. Mina, this is such an important conversation. I so appreciate you opening these cans of worms because we need to do that. We need to, you know, what I'm hearing this urgency from you, but also with a lot of grace, like we can do this and we can do this together. If people want to learn more about you and connect with you and learn with you and from you, tell us about your consultancy and what you are up to these days.
Of course. Okay. So if anybody wants to reach out to me, my website is namastedata.org. It is namastedata.org, namastedata. I wanted to pick a name, which is both my personal and professional identity. So namaste is my personal. I'm from India. Data is always been a data person, always. I think I'm always going to be that person. I have a bookshelf with 200 books on data, and I love those. So to Namaste Data. If you want to find me, that's where you can find me and what I'm up to these days. I'm really trying to build a space where we can have these AI conversations on a more continuous basis. And I call that space AI Advancement Lab. So if you want to check out about that project, you have to go to my website and you would find it on one of the tabs. You can also reach out to me via email or LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on one social media, and that's LinkedIn. That's enough for me. And so you can find me by my full name, Meenakshi, or the shorter name, Mina Das. And I will be there to answer all questions and do this conversation all over again with a cup of tea.
We've talked about this before, how we've broken up with a lot of social media and LinkedIn is our playground. So yeah, I will have all of those links in the show notes so you can connect with Mina. Thank you for nerding out with me today on data and AI. And I so appreciate you and the work you're doing in this space. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on this podcast. I don't know if you know, but I am subscribed to your newsletter and I love getting those. Whenever the mornings I would get those, it's the first thing I would read it, even before I would open any other email, any other conversation. So thank you for having me here.
You are so kind. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of When Bearing Witness. This podcast was produced by our friends at Rustic Roots. They are video storytellers passionate about sharing the impact of nonprofits. From story ideation to beautiful and powerful videos on screen, they've got you covered. Get in touch over at rusticroots.co. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please do subscribe and leave a rating and review. And remember, your role as a storyteller is making the world a healthier, safer, cleaner, and happier place. Thank you for bearing witness. Until next time.